I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer. If you were lucky, you got to spend some time outside last weekend. Maybe you gathered up a blanket, grabbed a cold drink from a bodega, and just went to sit outside. You may have laid down and looked up at the sky, and then after a bit, gotten up on your elbows and looked around at all the different sorts of people clumped in groups around you. That perfect and varied tableau of New Yorkers that can take your breath away. That was exactly what the designers of Prospect Park had in mind when they built the park just after the Civil War, a place where Brooklynites of all backgrounds and income levels would mingle. Men must come together, Frederick Olmsted wrote, unembarrassed by limitations that surround them at home. David Colley and Elizabeth Keegan Colley looked back at Prospect Park's history, how it was built and improved over the years, but also how it stayed remarkably consistent since its completion in the 1870s. Their new book is called Prospect Park, Olmsted and Vo's Brooklyn Masterpiece. David and Mary Liz, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you
very much,
Pleasure
Anna.
To be here.
And as we talk about this book, I also want to collect your calls, listeners, about a moment in Prospect Park that is just seared in your mind. Call with your Prospect Park memories, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. So, David, I want to ask you first about that mission of Prospect Park. Frederick Olmsted was actually drawn to do this project in Brooklyn by that idea of it having a social objective. Tell us about that.
Well, he was, but he was also drawn by Calvert Vaux. There is the problem of Olmsted is frequently given the credit for Prospect Park, but you have to include Calvert Vaux in that.
Uh-huh.
And it was their mission. It was very important for Vaux and Olmsted and Vaux, however you want to call it, to provide open space for the people of Brooklyn. In the middle of the 19th century, Brooklyn was growing at a tremendous rate, and there was an absolute need for open space. And so Vaux and Olmsted saw this, but also James S.T. Stranahan is a very important figure in the life of Prospect Park. He was the power behind it, the force behind it. He was the one that saw the need for it. He called in Olmsted and Vaux, and together Olmsted and Vaux worked their magic, and not only from landscape from a landscape perspective, but also they saw it as a very important adjunct to democracy. You have to have people have a place for people to rub shoulders, the wealthy and the poor, so that this is an enhancement to democracy. So there's a duality to this mission.
And you mentioned in the book, you said that desire and that demand for people to get outside. You say that Greenwood Cemetery was one of the most popular tourist destinations prior to Prospect Park coming out. So
right.
Prospect Park didn't create the demand to go outside.
No.
New Yorkers had it all along.
No. Greenwood Cemetery, I think, was built in the late 1830s. By 1850, it was attracting 500,000 people a year, most of them from Manhattan. They would pass through Brooklyn. They didn't want to have anything to do with Brooklyn. And, of course, this is another reason for Prospect Park. Stranahan wanted to create a park that rivaled Central Park, would attract Manhattanites as commuters and also increase the tax base.
We're getting some really great calls about Prospect Park memories. Donna in Staten Island, what do you remember?
I remember vividly on Sundays my father would take my sister and I to give my mother a break for a couple of hours. So he would take us out someplace. And one of the places that we often went was Prospect Park. And I vividly remember going down the huge steps from the Flatbush Avenue entrance. And I think we came right near the Seal Pool or whatever. But I vividly remember that. And it's a strong memory because he died when I was five.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So God, that memory is just wonderful.
Oh, that's wonderful. Donna, thank you so much for your call. Lee in the Bronx, what do you remember about Prospect Park?
Oh, the cherry blossoms. Every year that was the highlight. I lived on Eastern Parkway in the 80s when it was the crack capital. Everything was boarded up. I could not afford anything as a poor, struggling graduate student. But going to Prospect Park was the only entertainment I could afford.
All right, Lee, thanks for your call. And Jim, you have a particularly romantic memory, Jim in Crown Heights.
Yes, I was walking my dog, and so was my future wife. So we met in Prospect Park. And then 7 months later, I went to the exact same spot and proposed to her. And then we also got married in the picnic house in Prospect Park.
That is a good story. Jim, thanks so much for your call. Mary Liz, I want to ask you about the experience of taking the photographs for this book, because you did it over 5 years. You're there at all seasons. And it was during a time when Brooklyn is changing so rapidly around the park. Did you have the sense that the park was changing along with it, or did it seem consistent against that change?
The park somehow has managed to change with the community around it. For whether, you know, in the 1890s it was architectural styles, but it's always met the needs around it. What I found as a photographer, it was a dream assignment because it was beautiful, as you say, any time of day, any season. We were extraordinary, very good fortune to be able to be surrounded by the beauty and the history of the park. It was a wonderful experience.
And one of the things that I really thought about a lot reading the book was the way that you can see American history mapped on the park and its development, and the fact that it was, you know, they bought the land in 1861 and then couldn't get to building it until after the Civil War. Then you see WPA funds helping out with the construction of the zoo. And the band shell you mentioned as this kind of interesting symbol of the park's, you know, rise, and then it's kind of, you know, had a few tough decades mm-hmm. there in the 70s and 80s. The New York Times in 1984 said of the band shell that it's a sorry symbol of neglect that seemed to deserve the graffiti that stained it and the undrained pools of water that surrounded mm-hmm. it each spring. That yeah. just broke my heart reading that. talk about the band shell and how what you see, you know, in it. It doesn't look like that today.
No, it doesn't, and it's very well restored. The band shell was built, I think, in 1939. It represented the kind of the apex of the Moses era, and a lot of people didn't like the band shell. It had been built on the archery field, an old archery field, and a ball field. But through the years, it declined to the point where it was falling apart, and there are great stories of kids playing on the band shell area, burning parts of it, tearing parts of it down. And so that represented the low point of Prospect Park. The band shell, it was symbolized that decline. And in the 80s and 90s, it was restored. I think in the early 80s, the band shell was restored. It was expanded. And today is a wonderful venue for all kinds of activities, particularly Celebrate Brooklyn. And but the band shell does represent that decline in Prospect Park and in Brooklyn.
We've got a call from Roseland in Ocean, New Jersey. Roseland, what do you remember about Prospect Park?
Well, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, this would have been the 1950s, on May Day, every school mm-hmm. sent a group of children, the elementary schools, with a maypole, and we danced around the maypoles in Prospect Park. And I have vivid memories of that day. We rehearsed for many weeks the dances we were going to do. And when we got to Prospect Park and set up our maypole, everything, we lost it all. All the simulation, the beautiful surroundings, all the other children, we couldn't remember a thing.
You just became maniacs out there.
Yes. But we had a lovely day, and I don't know how long that tradition lasted, but it was a lovely thing to do for students.
Well, that was a tradition. There's a
yes.
photograph in the book of
it
children.
Started, I think, in the 1840s and was carried all the way through, and I'm not exactly sure when it ended, probably in the 50s or 60s. And I have no idea whether it'll ever be resurrected.
Oh, that's one of the you mix the photographs, the archival photographs, with the photographs you took, Mary Liz. Some of them, children being pulled by goat-drawn carriages, and women from the 19th century in full sort of 19th century gear, sitting on the same knolls that we sit on today in the Long Meadow. I mean, I imagine that was so interesting to be looking at these archival photographs and then going out and seeing that the landscape looks fairly similar as it did then.
The landscape is almost exactly the same, particularly with the new Lakeside Center, which will open up a view that had been blocked from the Concert Grove out to the lake. When I was photographing Prospect Park, and people would say, these are nice photographs, I'd say, well, I'm just photographing what Olmsted and Vox designed. You know what I mean? It's there. Sometimes the beauty of Prospect Park, I'd tell the Alliance that it was just overwhelming. So it hasn't changed. The good bones of the park are still there and haven't been changed, affected much at all.
One point you make is that it was a revolutionary battlefield and that it's one of the best preserved urban revolutionary battlefields because it's now a park.
Yeah, there was a major skirmish in Prospect Park during the Battle of Brooklyn about, I think it's 1777. And it's still there. It's called Redoubt Hill. It's on the East Drive. It's pretty much the same ground that was there during the battle. And it's to the best of my knowledge, it's the last remaining urban battlefield left from the Revolution, untouched.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And then part of the Eastern Drive, is it? It was a Native American footpath that came off of Flatbush Avenue?
There were Indian trails that wound through the park, and that one in particular came in from the north end and wound through the park and exited out by Flatbush Avenue.
Jenny and Windsor Terrace, what do you remember about Prospect Park?
Hold on a second. Be right with you. sometimes people are doing things while they're waiting to be on the radio. My favorite, this is from the last 10 years, my favorite memory of being in Prospect Park was actually watching the Met rehearse with like 20 other people with babies and dogs. Mm-hmm. So nice. And then my worst memory is being out in a pedal boat and realizing as we were out in the pedal boat that there was a plane flying overhead and that the plane was spraying for mosquitoes. And my friend had asthma, and we were like, how are we going to get out of there? So I love the park. I live for the park. I work by the park, and it's very important to me to keep the park permeable and beautiful. And some of the things like Ugamuga that are happening now bring in a lot of commerce and bring in a lot of construction crews. And I just love the vision of the park where everyone can go to everything, and I love how beautiful it is.
Jenny, thanks so much for your call. Eric in Manhattan, you've got a story about your dad getting in some trouble in the park?
Yeah, this is a story that I grew up with, and it gets told every few years. My father was born and raised in Brooklyn, still lives there, born in 1930, and sometime in the early 50s, he took one of the rowboats out onto the pond. And while he was in the middle of the pond, he took off his shirt to sunbathe.
No shirt, got a public indecency summons. That's a Prospect Park memory. David Colley and Mary Liz Colley are the authors of Prospect Park, Olmsted, and Vox's Brooklyn Masterpiece. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Our pleasure.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer. Have a great day.